Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Footy Prime the Podcast presents the Weekend Wrap Show with Brendan Dunlop, James Sharman, and Craig Forrest. Xavi to Camp Nou, will it return Barca to glory? Stevie G looks weird in claret and blue, but brings the W's. Liverpool, Chelsea, and Man City light up the score sheet, and ollie, goodbye. Let's get this party started.
Such a big weekend, we waited until the morning to bring you another edition of Footy Prime. I'm Brendan Dunlop, joined as always on this edition of the show by Craig Forrest. How you doing, Craiger?
Great. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. Well, guys, you were really good with these openings, but, eh?
No, sorry. How are you doing? How are you doing?
I am great. I am great. I am prepared, and I never share the rundown with you. But as is the theme, you always let the people know that there is a guest here, and that guest today, thawed out from the cold of Edmonton, is James Sharman.
Fellas, I missed you. I missed you so much that I thought I had to jump on as quickly as possible.
Not really a guest.
It's weird, though, not hosting. It's weird, like, not introducing.
You were gone so long, we're calling you a guest.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. It's just, it's in the lexicon. Yeah, this will be strange that you have no idea what's coming next. You have no idea where
I know. Well, you know, quite honestly, I don't anyway. Even when I'm hosting, I have no idea what's coming next, you dickheads. So
that's what makes Footy Prime beautiful, buddy. That's what makes it beautiful. Manchester United fans had no idea what was coming next. Here they thought for weeks, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time was out, surely. That embarrassment after losing to Liverpool, the opportunity to get someone as great as Antonio Conte, passing them by. And then here, the first week after the international break, where it seemed like this was a good window for United to take a break and figure things out, they get smashed and embarrassed by Watford 4-1.
Yeah, I mean, what a mess at that club right now. It's an absolute disaster. And it seems there's no plan in place. And that's obvious because they could have got Conte like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. He was sitting there. He would have been the right guy, I think, for the job. And now they're, you know, put Michael Carrick in charge for a couple of games. You know, poor Michael Carrick is trying to build his credentials. And it's been a disaster since he, you know, was Ollie's number two. So a real mess. The only way it can, you know, they can salvage anything here is if the rumors are true that Pochettino wants out at PSG and PSG wants Zidane and Zidane wants PSG. If those dominoes fall into place and they get Poch, then okay, they can pretend they had a plan, right? Even though they didn't have a plan, it just happened. The convenience of the situation allows them to get Poch. So if that works out, that's the right hire, obviously. Beyond that, I don't know who the right guy is who's available. Is Alan Kerbishley the right pick? Probably not.
Tim Sherwood.
Hey, what's wrong with Alan Kerbishley? He did all right.
He did great. I know, but he hasn't managed in 10 years.
No, I know.
But he's still on the shortlist of every job.
That's the thing, guys. It's who's available. Timing's not great. What do they do in the meantime? Do they stick with Carrick? The Pochettino thing is interesting. It looks as though he's left that open, that door. So that's a possibility. And we could see that happen. But other than that, I don't think Zidane's interested in Manchester United, to be honest with you.
I'm not even sure Zidane's would be the right choice anyway. You know, he doesn't speak English at all.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it's amazing that a guy that's got three Champions League crowns to his name still isn't that respected as an elite manager, I don't think, in the world game. There's still much to prove there, I think. He's only taken the Real Madrid job before, hasn't gone anywhere else.
And his biggest criticism was his tactical awareness, right? His tactics were the biggest thing criticized in that run. He inherited a Champions League caliber team that had won the Champions League and were flirting and on the cusp of it. And he was just able to pull the strings to get them there. And I mean, the biggest criticism of Ole was tactically. So it made no sense to me, that link. Repeatedly feels like now people keep mentioning his lack of English, but also the French job will be available after the World Cup, a job that he's in vocal about and wanting to take. And what would United do in that situation? Bring him in for 2 years?
But don't you think, though, PSG is almost the perfect job for him? Because it's so similar to the Real Madrid job in that you're going to be managing egos. That's your job. You know, if you can do that, you're going to probably win most of your games.
Mm-hmm.
It seems there's a perfect fit there because if he's not a tactician, okay, but with that team at PSG, you can probably still win games without being a great tactician as long as you get all the stars on your side.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think they were right because they're going to probably win that league and they're going to always have a decent run in the Champions League, you'd think. And if they can go on and win it, then all the better. But I don't think that that's a challenge like the Man United job at the moment. I mean, Man United's got a great squad of players. I mean, everybody spoke very highly of what was happening in the summer and what was going to happen this year. It hasn't turned out. And at the same time, you look at these players and you go, well, how many managers have they just gone through since Alex Ferguson? And none of them have been able to make a difference. And we've been talking about some really good managers. I mean, David Moyes took over. That was a really difficult situation for him. Look how well he's doing at Manchester United or West Ham United, rather. So it's interesting. Van Gaal couldn't get a grip. Mourinho couldn't get a grip. You know what I mean? So there has to be more to it than just the manager as well.
Oh, there has to be. Sharma said it off the beginning, like no plan. And this has got to be, I know a few pundits have criticized the timing. This has to be the worst possible time to be looking for a new manager. There's no top flight guys available. Everyone that we're talking about that might be suited, they have to pay some release clause and negotiate with their club to get them out of it. Every single one.
But at the very least, you knew what was happening with Ole. You're firing before the international break to give the new guy at least a couple of weeks to kind of prepare, you know, during the international break. They say, no, he's our guy. And then the first game back, the players quitting him, first game back, and now they're panicking. I mean, Michael, this is Manchester United, for Christ's sakes. Now, I think it was Jonathan Wilson who said this. He goes, there's only ever been three good managers at Manchester United, three successful managers, and that is Matt Busby and Sir Alex and some other guy from freaking 100 years ago. If you look at the track records right now, they were there for a very long time, right? And that's why. But the track records have not been great ever since. That being said, the one name that keeps coming up to me through this whole post-Fergie era is Fergie. And that is, he's been the guy who's been recommending these managers and hasn't planned out. And now we talked about this, me and you, we argued about this during a podcast last few weeks when Craig and Deitch weren't there. And have you changed your mind? Do you think Fergie is responsible? Because I was blaming him entirely for where they're in their predicament, for quitting and then for recommending these clowns.
This will be the telling point, because if they are able to get a manager that it's clear is a manager for the long term, then I would say we have to see it out. But what I think is going to happen, and the most telling thing from this Manchester United statement yesterday morning in parting ways with Ole, notice they didn't say sacking, that it was, you know, a mutual parting of ways, was that they were beginning the search for an interim boss as Michael Carrick took over. It's interim. Now, at this point in the season, does that mean you're writing off the entire season? Or do you really not have any viable long-term candidate accessible? So you have to begin the search for an interim person? And I was thinking that I wouldn't be surprised if there was some hotshot young Portuguese manager that is in the mix here, someone on the client list of Jorge Mendes. And the big story last night and this morning is the sporting boss, Ruben Amorim, is the hot candidate. 36 years old and a former teammate of Cristiano Ronaldo. If United went like that road, I would wonder how much influence Fergie had in that choice.
So help me out. Is he really revered in Portugal, this young guy, Sporting? Is he like a stud who's going to be the next Jose Mourinho?
Not necessarily the next Jose Mourinho, because he had a much better playing career. He played for Portugal at the World Cup in 2010. I like him a lot because he was one of the members of Benfica, the only one that did not try to bang my girlfriend that night at the nightclub.
The only one.
So I've always been a really big fan of Ruben Amorim. But he led Sporting to the title for the first time, you know, in the 20 years or the second time in 20 years. And he's just revered as this kind of new wave guy who has almost the mindset and the coaching mind of someone like André Villas-Boas is the comparison, but he's got the relationship and the player's mentality for having been a successful player and having played at the big clubs.
Why wouldn't you, in that case, if you're looking for the next big thing in world management, a younger guy who's cutting his teeth in a different league or a different club, why not look at Graham Potter at Brighton, who's done a remarkable job there, playing kind of the Manchester United way. The fans would accept him, right, from a tactical standpoint. He is a tactician.
Do you think they would accept him, though?
Well, you know,
do you actually think
they
would?
From a tactical, from the way his teams play, yes. Now, would they accept him? Probably not. He's not a big enough name, which is
that's the thing.
Probably a statement, perhaps, on the United fans right now. But I mean, if you're going to go overseas and get some young stud who's done it all, you know, and won something, and you know, nurturing a young, what he's done at Brighton is great. Why wouldn't you at least look at him in that case?
But it's also this weird window that they put themselves in, because Ruben Amorim would be a massive gamble for them, but it would show some long-term vision, or at least that someone else has some influence. Like, I don't think Fergie's making that pick. You know, I think that they're allowing those at the table, and Mendes and Ronaldo should have a seat at the table in this situation. I think they would be
Ronaldo,
allowing.
Why should Ronaldo? Why
should he have a seat at the table?
Yeah,
because he's the best player that you've had in the last 25 years, and he's the only player performing now.
He's 36. He's not going to be there long haul, though. Why would you ask his opinion on a long haul manager when he's leaving in a couple of years?
Well, because as
you can't ask Ronaldo. He's the most selfish human being in the world. You can't ask him his opinion.
Well, this is the whole point. Are they writing off this season and the next, or are they looking to win the title while he's there? Because I think they believe they're going to win the Champions League while he's there.
Craig, did West Ham have a little meeting with Paulo Di Canio and get his thoughts on the next manager at West Ham?
No, only because he's nuts.
So is this club. So is this club.
They might do it, but come on, you can't be asking, okay, hey, Ronaldo, you know, you're a loyal boy. You love us so much. You know, you're going to be here for a long time. What's your thoughts? Who should we hire? You can't ask him his opinion. He's a selfish striker. He's a wonderful selfish striker, but he's thinking about himself, no one else.
I'm not saying it's the right way to go about it.
Hey, the goal that they scored against Watford wasn't selfish. Did you see that? He could have headed it himself, and he laid it. He cushioned it back across for.
Yeah, what a servant for the club.
Nothing selfish about that, Charms.
What a servant for the club. You're right. You're right. I stand corrected.
He just missed it. He just missed it. It was a rare miss, and Donny van de Beek to the rescue.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, hey, behind closed doors, having a word with Ronaldo about his thoughts, I think you'd be crazy not to.
Yeah.
I think you would. I think just from the side of things, where everywhere he's played, the managers he's played under, what he's looking for, what he thinks the club would be looking for, I think his opinion would go an awful long way. Would they make that public? No, I don't think so. But I think it would be worth having a chat with him about what his thoughts are. But Man United have gone many different ways here, right? They went the Moyes route, then they went the experience, they had the Van Gaal, right? Mourinho. Then they went to their buddy Ole, who basically stuck around because he had a lot of friends and he's very well respected, and that's great. But that's what kept him, I think, through that international break. Quite honestly, I think they just thought he's going to somehow turn it around. And Watford, they figured, it'll be okay, and we'll be okay for a few weeks, maybe till the next international break, and then that display. I mean, who was it? I think it was Alan Shearer, who mentioned some of these guys are on £200,000-£300,000 a week, and they don't even put a shift in. Like, yeah, not even a shift. They were pathetic at times, Manchester United.
Yeah, they were.
They've gone every route but the right route so far, right? And maybe Moyes would have been the right route given more patience. I mean, Christ, if they gave Moyes the same patience they gave Ole, he might have figured it out, right? But that's in the past. They haven't done that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I think they really wanted Ole just to do enough to last the summer when there'd be more people available. That's what they were really hoping for. But that's, I mean, what have you been watching the last?
So short-sighted.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're still expecting this guy to fail. And guess what? He failed.
But everything that they've done. I mean, yeah, expecting him to fail, but eight games into the season, they gave him the extension in July. They shot themselves in the foot with that extension, which is also what they did in making him the permanent manager. Because remember, he was brought in as an interim. No one thought that he had the credentials. No one thought that he was ready for it. Just having, you know, been in charge of Molde and hadn't earned the big job yet, but had the friends and, you know, had a bit of luck. Right, finished third that the first season. Had a great run.
Had a great run.
Had a really good run last year at the end, and they set themselves up really for this year when they brought in a couple, and then they're like, all right, we're ready to go. We got the pieces.
Yeah.
Well, they finished, second last year, right?
They did finish second last year.
Yeah. So second last year, which is, okay, pretty good. But I'm sorry, it's Manchester United. You know, you should be expecting better than second. And quite frankly, if you watched last season, you knew that you weren't actually the second best team. You happened to finish second, right? But there were some other reasons in a very strange season. This team was not, you know, the trajectory was not going upwards even last season. It just wasn't. There was too many issues.
It's definitely not now. And that's why I think this appointment will be so interesting, and why in the conversation of Ronaldo or someone other than Fergie having a big influence on the short term here is they got a chief executive that's walking out the door, right?
Apparently. No one knows when, though.
All of these managers, well, I thought it was supposed to be the end of the season.
Yeah, well, yeah, apparently, but there's no like firm date, though.
So imagine being someone like even Brendan Rodgers, right, who apparently has an £8 million release clause, and I think that makes him accessible. If they were to go full-time job, and you know, look to make a long-term appointment here, his stock went up because he seems to be more accessible, I think. But
his team's playing so well right now. So
yeah, his team's playing so well right now. I know. I was saying with Craig, or I think in our group chat, like there's a guy who the bookie's odds for him being sacked have just gone up, and much like Dean Smith, he could be in a new job immediately. He'll be plucked out of it.
No, he'd be a great United hire. He's so freaking typical, right?
Right.
He did coach Liverpool, right?
And he did okay too,
didn't he?
I remember.
There's no way every United fan will ever accept him,
Yeah.
Right? It'd be a dumb hire. Even though I think he's a really good manager, it'd be a dumb hire because you're just, once again, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You know, you're giving the fans an excuse to not like him and to jump on his back the minute things go a little bit shaky.
So we've agreed then that this season is a write-off.
Yeah, I am.
Why don't they just give it to Ronaldo? He coached in the Euro final.
So this is what I'm saying. And before it was Emery, someone that with actually a pedigree, I thought it's gonna be a client. No,
if they ask him his opinion, that will be. You know what, Dave? I think you should start hiring me. I'll play a coach. Yes, that's what he's gonna say. It's Ronaldo. He can do a better job than everyone. So you ask him his opinion. That's what he'll say. Hire me.
Done.
Me.
Hire him. Do it to the end of the year. See what he can
do. Amazing, wouldn't it? It would be amazing to watch.
Wouldn't it? Player manager, Ronaldo?
I would love it.
With the Dalglish. And who was a star striker at Liverpool in the mid-80s, Greg? Kenny Dalglish. Give him the job. Championships. Trophies start bleeding from every pore.
Well, I'm always disappointed, right? The few times we've seen these player managers that they haven't played themselves, they always remove themselves immediately. Because what I think Gary Monk did that at Swansea, right? Because it wasn't a Gary Monk.
Monk, I forgot about him. That's right.
So the first day, I thought, oh, he's actually like still going to play, and he was in the trainers, and then he never played again. And I was like, well, wait a second here. That's not really. We're not throwing it back to the old player manager days. And then before the end of the season, he's up there in a suit.
Hey, is that a bit like me accepting my role as a guest on this particular podcast?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that would be it. Look, guests today, number one in our hearts and number one on the subscription for anyone who downloads the show. Okay, this is the show. The title of the show is Footy Prime by James Sharman for anyone who downloads it.
Yeah,
so
that's right. This is, I know, it's weird that. I don't know what that is, but anyway. By the way, do you think it was weird to see Ollie jump on MUTV for that interview?
To have an exit interview?
Yeah, it was kind of weird, wasn't it? Usually they just walk out the door and they get escorted out with their box and the security guard. No, hey, come on over, Ollie. Speak to a camera.
They love him.
Yeah, because there was a real effort, right, made for this to be not a burning, not a bad exit, that the club wanted to make it look like they both came to the decision it was the right time to walk away and show the respect that obviously, you know, he hadn't earned in the last little bit and wasn't going to get from the fans right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. They didn't want to tarnish his relationship with the fans and also his history with Manchester United as well. There's a lot of respect there, rightly so. Mm-hmm.
We should mention, by the way, we're recording this podcast and I haven't yet seen the press conference today with Carrick and Harry Maguire that they're talking about everything. I'm sure they'll see nothing of any kind of note, but we are aware that it happened today, but we're recording this while that's being...
Thanks for that guest, Charms.
More than a guest, Charms. More than a guest.
More than a guest.
Harry Maguire sent off, saw red for the fifth time in his career. In that match, too, it just looked like United were about to turn things around, and then Maguire got the red. Is he someone that will keep the captain's armband when the new guy comes aboard?
Well, no, Ronaldo will get it when he gets the coaching job. He'll give himself the armband.
Captain's armband doesn't matter anyway.
You don't think so? Especially at a club like that?
No. Because the guy wearing the captain's arm back, the guy actually leading, can be a different person in the dressing room.
Right.
Craig, you tell me, is it often the captain is the biggest kiss ass? He's not necessarily the greatest leader?
No.
Can it happen?
No. It's not often that. You know, you see that they give it, sometimes they give it to the best player too, you know.
Oftentimes, yeah. Yeah,
always on true. The pitch, but
that's a hockey thing. Hockey for sure. That's what they do, right? The best player gets the armband.
Yeah,
or the C. Yeah, I should say.
Yeah, and they get the captain's C at the age of 20. I never understood that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because they're going to earn it. They're going to grow into it. Well, let them grow into it then. Why do they need it at the age of 20?
Precisely.
Yeah, I mean, Man United in their heyday with all their best teams. You know, it didn't matter. There's 11 guys out there who could be captain, right? Can you imagine the dressing room when things went sideways? Man United, they call each other out. Oh my,
yeah.
You know,
but they went Brian Robson to Keane, right? I think it was there was no one in between, was there? I don't think that was it. Pretty good choices,
yeah,
really, given regardless of who was in the room at the time. I guess when Keane took over, it was still a pretty young room, right? You know, the class 92, and you knew, but there were still some veterans there, some hardcore veterans who were obviously helping Keane.
Yeah, Dennis Irwin, he always talks about Dennis Irwin being like a mentor and buddy. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's super biased because they were Ireland teammates. Have you seen the overlaps that Gary Neville does for Sky, where he goes for a walk essentially with some key figure for an hour? They are mm-hmm. outstanding. He went walking the German Shepherds with Roy Keane through the woods. And yeah. I watched him with Carragher for an hour through the neighborhood in Liverpool where Carragher grew up, Boodle. That was interesting. That was very interesting.
Tell you what, Gary Neville going for a walk in Bootle. That's,
well, it was in the pandemic. It was in the pandemic where there was literally no one on the streets. That was why. He said that. That was the first time he'd ever been to Liverpool, not for football.
Really? Eh?
Yeah.
Hey, Craig, who was your best captain? Who was the one guy that stood out as this is the, he's got all the ingredients to be a great captain, and that's a guy that I truly respect.
Well, actually, a guy that was actually captain. I don't know. I look at a guy like Grant Williams, the Welsh international at Ipswich. He wasn't even captain. But as far as leader goes, he was as good as anybody. Mm-hmm. West Ham, you know, Neil Ruddock, Stuart Pearce, Nigel Winterburn.
Good names, eh? Jesus.
Guys like that in that age group. Steve Lomas, call people out. You know, like tons of guys that were leading behind the scenes, as opposed to just the guy who wears the armband.
And it's changed so much, obviously, right? But this is what I love about the behind-the-scenes shows. When I know that Deitch has spoken about it. Well, it's different when the cameras are on and people are putting on. And sure, there's a bit of it. But you know who's a leader I never would have thought in those Man City teams a few years ago that really came through? And you could tell when he left, not that it left a hole, but it did change for City a little bit. And they had a bit of a blip. And we wondered, well, who's the one, you know, wrangling necks in that room? Fabian Delph. Remember Fabian Delph in that All or Nothing series?
Yeah, that's right. He was really vocal, wasn't he?
It blew me away. And he had the attention of everyone. But it was also, he spoke like someone who had won everything and deserved to be the one standing mm-hmm. in the middle of the room speaking.
Yeah, that's a really good example of not really understanding or knowing what's happening behind the scenes or what the captain does or what other players do and what their roles are.
Yeah.
Some guys aren't interested in having the captain's armband either, too, right? You know, I'm quite happy to lead behind here. I don't need to have that captain's armband for mm-hmm. optics.
Yeah. I think Delph, too. I mean, there were so many foreign players and new players to the club in that room, and guys that might have been a little bit shy at first. And Delph was a big personality, also an English boy from the north.
Right.
You know, probably felt a lot more comfortable in his own skin and allowed him to be that guy. Because, I mean, he was a good player, don't get me wrong, but he was never a star at City, ever.
No.
But and in fact, he's a bit part player at City, right? But he was able to stand up in that room and people respected him for the man, not so much as the performer on the field and a week-to-week basis.
Mm. But it's funny, right? If you look at that squad with how deep it is, and it doesn't matter how much money they spend on players, for anyone who is a fantasy Premier League player, Man City has got to be the most frustrating team to deal with because you never know if your player is going to be in the squad. Someone like Raheem Sterling, who kept Jack Grealish out of England, but it's been the opposite at club level. And there's, if not Grealish, there's a few other players that have kept Sterling out. He got back in the side and marked his 300th Premier League appearance with a goal against Fabian Delph's Everton.
And he's 26, eh? 300 starts, right? Isn't that the starts?
Oh, 300 starts.
I think, whatever it is, regardless, it's impressive. He's 26.
That was my question. My, did you know, boys, how old is Raheem Sterling?
Because he's 26.
I know, guest. You're a great guest. You're going to get our Guest of the Year award, okay? Sorry, John Herdman. James Sharman has taken it from you. City, again, just shown miles above. But, I mean, I thought it was funny to see both City, Liverpool, and Chelsea just run up the score sheet on this weekend in particular, because we knew that the gap between, you know, those three and everybody else was so far. And, you know, Arsenal were in really good form. I think Manchester United were a team that people want to keep in that top five conversation, but those three are just miles above.
What a race, eh, Craig? What a race this year. I mean, if you look at the top three teams, assuming, I mean, listen, with respect to West Ham, they might be in the conversation for top four, but say it's going to be City, Chelsea, and Liverpool. I mean, my God, they're three really very good teams,
yeah.
And it's going to go down to the wire. But I don't know if maybe it's recency bias. I don't know if we've seen three teams this good all at the same time or for quite some time.
Mm, yeah, those three teams are at a different level. Liverpool on this weekend, they showed it, didn't they? And then Arsenal go to, you know, Anfield, and they're in a good run, right? Arteta was excited.
They've been in great form.
On the side of the on the pitch, he was trying to get his players all pumped up. But Liverpool were just different class, like unbeatable that day. You know, and you see that, and you're going, okay. Well, at the end of the day, as well, for Arsenal fans, I don't think it's the end of the world for them. They certainly are showing improvement, but boy, that was a statement by Liverpool.
Well, I mean, Arsenal is also, you know, if you look at who they've beaten, the last, I think, since that big loss to City, I think it was. Nine games, played really well, but there haven't been very many good teams right now. With respect, they're getting better. I think Arsenal will be just fine. I like Arteta, but they've beaten the beatable teams in the Premier in that run.
Liverpool are missing a bunch of players as well, so I think a statement performance again from one of the teams in the title race, and what I agree with you will be one of the better title races we've seen in a while. That Manchester City game was something. Talk about all the beauties that get into that squad. And Ilkay Gundogan is a player that just walks into the team. Seems like whenever he's healthy, he misses all this time, and all of a sudden he shows up on the team sheet. There's not too many guys like that. Joao Cancelo is becoming that guy. Joao Cancelo is a player that needs to be on Pep's team sheet each and every time, and he proved it again in that game.
Yeah, is he like the most unknown superstar in the Prem right now? Because he's been great all year. Just great. And that pass to Sterling, if I was single, I would probably propose to it. It was that good. I mean, something about the outside of the boot passes. It used to be that I like volleys. That was my go-to, you know, I fall in love with volleys. Now I think it's that pass, that kind of pass, you know, when they just, the outside of the boot, it's so difficult. And someone like myself, who's, you know, obviously just a shit footballer, but I can appreciate the technical side of things. That kind of pass, and I would never even consider trying, nor could I ever even come close to accomplishing. I just love it so much. It's so special.
You know, and it was not even necessarily like a cross. It was pretty straight, and the run was perfect to be able to actually execute that on the run outside of the foot. Talking about it before, if you're a quarterback and you got that ball in your hand and you split them open like that in the NFL, we'd be talking about what a pass that was, let alone with the outside of the right foot on the move, you know, right into the path of Sterling. Absolutely unbelievable. I couldn't watch it enough. It's just amazing. Different class.
Rodri's goal, Rodri's blast. There was quite a few bangers, two in MLS.
Maybe he's the most unlikely superstar in the Prem right now. Rodri, he's been brilliant as well. He's maybe been their best player this season.
And they've been looking for that successor, right, to Fernandinho. I think they've got it. In him,
he put his laces through that bad boy, didn't he? Jesus Christ, he just buried it. The commentator says, if not for the net, that one would still be going, which is one of my favorite commentator lines. It's not original, but it's brilliant. I just like those ones because, man, from a goalkeeping standpoint, Craig, I mean, you saw Pickford, right? And he kind of just like, must have had a few of those in your time, and there's nothing I could do about that drive.
Did you watch the United game? Of course, he's had a few of those in his time.
He saved the penalty, Gregor, in that game. He saved the penalty.
Which one? Yeah, Dennis Irwin. Yeah, Dennis Irwin. Have that.
Two Dennis Irwin mentions on this show. Who saw that coming today?
Yeah, exactly.
I love Dennis Irwin. Great interview, by the way.
He didn't miss many penalties, although he did get the rebound. Fuck. But that doesn't matter. Save more penalties at Old Trafford than old Pedro Schmeichel.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Best stat in football, that, by the way. But Craig, I mean, what's the best goal to concede as a goalkeeper? Is it like a Rodri, like just sheer power and not even, you know, a robot would save it? Or is it like a curling one that just bends and defies physics? What's the one that you would prefer to concede?
Yeah, any goal that's not your fault.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, fair enough.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, as soon as that's come off his boot, you know you're beaten. You know the well, you know your angle so well, and you know when you are beaten.
So why bother diving?
You very rarely ever go for one at that level, the millions of hours that you put in, and don't know whether you got a shot at it or not. You really do. You're just slightly swerving away from them as well. I mean, it's, yeah, some are unstoppable.
I guess it depends on which side of the pitch, you know, they're attacking on. But I feel as though left-footed players, their goals perhaps aren't as appreciated as right-footed players, because I think of how many right-footed players end up getting pulled to the left side, then they can cut in on that strong foot and, you know, whip in a curling beauty. Like Ollie Watkins did it in Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa debut. And you can just, as the fan watching, you can see the bend and you know exactly what he's attempting to do. And the keeper who sprawls out, and they're almost always 6 feet plus, it didn't matter if he was 7 feet tall, like they're not getting that. Those goals I really like watching. That's probably my, what did you call your volley equivalent? That's what you get off on? What's your term for it?
Essentially, I get off on that. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
The ones that really pissed me off are the ones that you got defenders that aren't marking and they're ball watching, and they come in and they have like three options and they just tap it in the empty net. You know, like those are the ones that I really don't like in a seating.
Yeah, well, those ones, Craig, I would think when I see those, you're pretty pissed off with your defense as well. Like, for Christ's sakes, how did that happen? You know, you were picked apart. Whereas a long drive like Rodri or a curler, like even the defenders, is not really their fault, you know, unless they pull out of a block or something, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the old tic-tac-toes, like, oh, for Christ's sakes, you idiots, you know, do something.
Well, I mean, you can get the ones who are really nicely done, like a tic-tac-toe, like around a few defenders, and sometimes you're not going to blame them for that. But if it's simply somebody at the back post that is snuck around because your defender is just glued on the ball and he's not paying attention to what's behind him, because the guy behind him is what's important, and not necessarily where the ball is. And that happens a lot, even at the top level.
Wasn't that Rudiger's goal for Chelsea this weekend? It's kind of similar to that. I mean, it's a great header. It was a great header, but he just won the battle for the ball, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And the best strikers just have a knack to finding that little bit of space. And then you have the brilliant tacticians that can actually have the vision to find them,
yeah,
which is another level again.
Well, that Kyle Larin goal again for Canada, you know, let's go back. I'm kind of dating ourselves here. Let's go. That Kyle Larin goal, where if you actually watch it in slow motion, he is a great goal, right? He kind of pulled off just slightly, and then got the tap in, right? And people blame the keeper and stuff, and fair enough. But what he did, just pulling off the little nuances that you don't see when you see it first time around. Like a really good goal by a good striker.
It was a great ball. Like, it was dangerous. It was like, as soon as the ball is delivered, me and Dunny are watching, and I was like, that's a great ball. Like, I get on the end of it. But at the same time, what's Ochoa doing? Oh my God, the ball's traveled 35 yards in the air. And Ochoa, who has an amazing reputation for the most part with the national team,
yeah,
with Mexico, 3 yards off his line, and he didn't come for it. Maybe that weather did play a part for him.
By the way, The Guardian have a great column today about Jonathan David. So, you know, the world is waking up to Canadian football and Canadian players. He's being linked with Inter Milan a lot this week, Liverpool as well. He's moving from Lille end of the season, it sounds like, for a lot of money. And for The Guardian.
Watch out for Newcastle, too. Just keep an eye out for that. I got a feeling they're sniffing around.
Interesting.
We'd said that on a previous show, too, right? What are the types of players that they would be chasing in January? And it's players that, you know, would be high profile, high targets, but maybe not necessarily in January as high cost. And there's a guy that I could see them writing a £50 million check for without thinking twice about it.
But David, I mean, he's playing Champions League football right now. Would he, and money talks, I understand that, and I wouldn't begrudge anyone for following the money, but I mean, would he be prepared to go to Newcastle, who's going to still somewhat struggle for a while, or go to an Inter Milan or a Liverpool, that next step up? How big a step up is it going from Lille to Newcastle? I mean, it's the Premier League, I understand that.
Well, the only thing is, with Newcastle, do you want to be part of this building phase that looks pretty exciting and bring success to Newcastle and be that era that brings it to Newcastle? Pretty exciting to be part of that. Sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the fans will just love you and embrace you.
Oh, love you. Love you. But a lot of pressure too, because you have to deliver.
Well, is it better? You tell me, Craig, is it better as a player to go to a rebuild that's going to be something probably given the resources, or is it better to go to Liverpool or Inter Milan where you're already going to be a very good team? And now, I know Inter's, they're selling off players right now. They can't afford them, strangely enough. But you're still going to a storied club with recent success, or you're going to Liverpool potentially where you're going to be competing for a championship every single year. Mm-hmm. What's the drive? I guess everyone's different, right?
Well, sure, but if he goes to Newcastle, he's going to guarantee himself playing time.
Yep.
If he goes to Liverpool or some of these other clubs you're mentioning, I'm not sure that that's a guarantee.
Right.
Yeah, I thought the move to France was a great move for him. I don't know who his agent is and everything, but for playing time,
perfect.
I thought that was a really, really good move.
There were other Premier League teams interested in him, right? And bigger teams interested in him that had been flirting.
West Ham, I think, wasn't it, at one point?
West Ham was one. Was Barcelona not one too that had,
maybe
that he was rumored with? I think there was a couple other big teams, and it seemed as though Lille was a real strategic decision for him. And I think as far as the Premier League is concerned, that's what Newcastle would be to me. He'd walk into the team, he'd be someone expected to score goals, but I think someone that would have, you know, the opportunity outside of the top four spotlight to find his feet a little bit, much like he did at the beginning of Lille. But that's a team that's going to be selling off a lot. The big rumor is Renato Sanchez will be out in January, or maybe it's just his camp talking. I think he's in the Mendes camp, actually. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few of those little players that go. We thought that would be the case before the season started, right, with the money troubles in France.
One thing you have to remember, too, the jump from, no disrespect to the French league, but the microscope in the Premier League is on like a different level.
Yeah.
The pressures are a different level. The tabloids, the pressures with people write, the hatred, it's all going to come at him in Newcastle. So you have to be ready for that as well, which is a different level again. And we've also seen players come from those types of leagues and not done well in the Premier League. Not so much the French league so much, but Eredivisie, the Belgium league, you know, guys have filled the net in those leagues and come over and not done very well. So it's a difficult one. It's a decision, but it all depends on how much he's going to cost and what the price tag is. But certainly he's going to be someone that many are looking at. They're all looking at him.
Was there much international press there in Edmonton, Sharms? I was surprised to see how many of our media friends were actually out there on Twitter. But was there a bigger crowd than you expected? Media?
No, I mean, there's a large contingent of the Canadian soccer media were there. I didn't see too much international. A lot more. Once Mexico arrived, it was a lot more media, a lot of local. I don't think it's quite captured the global imagination just yet. But maybe moving forward, it will. But yeah, I mean, there was a good amount of us, that's for sure.
I know there's been discussions about this Canadian team in Britain on some different shows over there. So they're gaining some attention for sure.
Rightfully so.
One thing that surprises me, doesn't it, to you guys, like in Canada, it's like we fucking live on Mars. It's like people here, for generally, even in the media, they don't understand the magnitude of what's going on. They don't get it. They really just don't get it. The World Cup. I mean, we're talking about billions and billions. Like, this isn't freaking NHL. This isn't Major League Baseball. The Blue Jays were getting 1.5 million audiences for their baseball run.
Yeah,
come on.
They hit two in the playoffs. This is a great question because I just had this conversation yesterday about how big the TV numbers would be, what the ratings would be for a Canada match in Qatar. the women's gold medal game was 4.4 million on CBC. I feel as though that would be the floor for a men's World Cup appearance.
Mm. Oh, yeah, for sure. You get so much of the mainstream Canadian sports fans, right? Even watching those games, you know, in Edmonton, there weren't that many hardcore football fans there, right? The Voyagers were there, of course. I would say the majority were people taking in a spectacle, and hopefully they learned, wow, this is something pretty cool. I want to see more of this, and we grow that way. That's why I hope, because it didn't sound like a football crowd. It didn't.
There was a lot of go Canada, go chants.
Yep, and BMO was louder than Edmonton.
Yeah.
Right, with half the people. A slightly more sophisticated soccer audience at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a better football stadium, too.
Yeah, for sure. A much better stadium. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we're still in that infancy. But yeah, I mean, I think, is it 50 million you get to qualify for the World Cup or something crazy? You get a lot of money.
50.
To qualify for a World Cup, which would change a lot. And also, that would also unlock corporate Canada as well. There's people out there. I was on Bob McCowan's podcast actually last week, and obviously they know the business side of Canadian sports better than most. And he was saying that, listen, you know, corporate Canada, that there's always money out there saying they want to spend money. They want to spend money on the right thing, and a World Cup team would be the right thing. So it would change absolutely everything. It's huge, like Craig said there.
I hope so, Sharms, but I have my doubts.
Yeah?
I have my doubts. There will be certain ones that will jump on because they think it's going to give them value, exposure. But generally speaking, the business community in Canada don't have a fucking clue what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, they don't.
Right now or over the course of the last number of years? Because we haven't had that World Cup team.
Well,
right?
I think because, of course, it goes... Like now and in history, it's embedded in the culture of sports here. You know, it's hockey is part of the fabric of Canada sports, and that, you know, Canada's game goes an awful long way. Very, very powerful. And the whole structure of corporate Canada, the owners of the teams and everything else, just everything feeds toward hockey. We don't call basketball our game, but we invented it. We don't push lacrosse at the same level as we do with hockey. You tell me why. I don't know why, but there's something more to it. The rest of the world can't be wrong and we're right. And we've got this game of hockey and you guys are all fucking wrong. And we got the best game in the world. Can't be true.
You can see some holes even in the way corporate Canada invests in hockey. And that's, to me, that's why I could see some doubts and, oh, all of a sudden they're going to get soccer right for the first time. No, there'll be a few of these, you know, major companies who are used to it, who will invest a ton around the World Cup. And hopefully that continues in the infrastructure. There's, you know, there's one big bank that we've been seeing a campaign for the last few years talking about, you know, investing in the youth for that team. I think they even say, 2030. Or whatever that 2030 or the 2034 World Cup, and that's kind of been their campaign as far as investment goes. I think you'll see quite a bit of that, but I'm with Craig and have my doubts that corporate Canada will really, you know, jump on board and drive it forward instead of just using the moment to, you know, get attention for themselves in that World Cup month.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to be the optimist, fellas. I have nothing but great feelings about what's about to happen here. If we do end up qualifying for a World Cup, watch out, we're going to take over the world.
Oh, I thought I didn't know if that was your politician hat, like your posture changed. Although, like, you're clean shaven today, you look like you're making CP24 appearances as well.
No, nothing today, just you.
If of the four of us, you would definitely be ones that would the one that would have dinner with like John Tory on a weekly basis.
Oh, me? Why me? Why?
That's the mayor of Toronto. You just, you know, you kiss up to the political types. You just seem that.
No, I'm the one that kisses up to freaking Saudi Arabian oil magnates.
What did you think of the Qatar Grand Prix? That was their first big international show.
Lewis won, right?
Lewis Hamilton won, yeah. 8-point difference. There's a soccer point to me bringing this up because David Beckham has been skewered. Did we talk about him on the last show, Craig, about his...
We've talked about him on the podcast. I'm not sure whether you were there or not with the whole Saudi Arabia, the old Qatar
partnership.
Is it for sure he signed up?
So that's what the English papers were all on all weekend, because he's been on social media. He had been rather quiet, and in any of his posts, he wasn't tagging where he was. But the rumor was that he was going to be at the Qatar Grand Prix as a friend of Lewis Hamilton, which he was. And the Sky cameras were all over it. So, yeah, he's going to have a tough time, I think, living that down.
Okay.
Yeah, there'll be a few that few of that this year, right? Like, I don't know if you paid attention to the American political stories, but Joe Biden's administration are kind of leading this boycott of the Beijing Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, political boycotts. They're still sending the teams, though, right?
You know, incredible thing. They'll send their team. They complain about human rights and all this, and the Americans, Canadians, and the British sell weapons to these guys.
I know, it's such hypocrisy.
Right?
It really is. And then let's put the athletes on the spot instead.
We got to be careful who we point fingers at.
No, the athletes are, they're saying basically, listen, it's easier for us to make a stand while we're there than just not showing up.
Right.
Which makes sense. At the same time, it's also convenient for them to compete in their chosen Olympic sport. So anyway, I think it's very unfair to expect athletes to get political and make stands. If you want to, great, but it's not fair. It's up to our leaders, quotation leaders, to do that.
From a football perspective, I think we need some new leaders, and you're going to see some new players take a stance in France with what's going on with the violence. You saw the match was abandoned between Marseille and Lyon after Dimitri Payet was hit with a water bottle. And there's been plenty of projectiles thrown, well, it's all over. But in France, it's been a regular issue now with abandoned games. 3 out of the 7 away matches that Marseille have played this year, they've been hit by projectiles and have stopped the match momentarily. So the players left the pitch and they didn't come back when the referee demanded they would come back. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's not actual changes at the top, literally in the executive team that runs Liga, with removals and replacements, if this isn't a conversation headed into the next match week about matches not being played.
Do they not have cameras? Like in the Premier League, there's cameras all over.
CCTV, you mean?
Stadiums. Like the fans know it. It took a while for them to get used to it back when they brought them into the stadiums. But once they knew they were on camera and the charges that were thrown at these guys, it ended very, very quickly. In France, I don't think they do have the cameras on the fans, and it's harder to police this.
Mm. What gets me is that Dimitri Payet, twice this season now, he's been involved in a water bottle incident. Because remember earlier in the season, someone threw one at him, and then he threw it back?
Yes.
Now he's been hit by one.
Trying to say that maybe he deserves it?
That's what I'm saying. If they're targeting Payet, though, I mean, there's some guy out there with a great arm, right? Accuracy. I mean, Craig, you've been bombarded by bottles and bags in the past, right? The throw from the stands at a player and actually get your target, I mean, that's impressive, man. You should be playing freaking shortstop or something.
I think he was taking a corner, though, wasn't he?
Even so, though, I mean, a bottle, I mean, did it have liquid in it? Do we know?
It did have liquid in it.
Because if it's full, that's one thing, but if it's half full, the way the water, the ballast moves in the bottle, right? That bottle is not going to have a true
trajectory
delivery.
You don't think there's any coincidence to the fact that he actually...
I think it's sheer fluke. I think he's just unlucky. He's like being hit by lightning twice. Really unlucky.
Unlucky, yeah. Payet. He might have the worst haircut in soccer at the moment. His hairstyle. He's got like the man buns that are like...
Princess Leia?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. But they're on top of his head, not on the side of his head. Anyway, who am I to criticize hairstyles?
They'd be people in glass houses, you know?
Right?
If what you say.
Yeah, you have a go at buns.
Yeah, I know. But it's not it's like a pony bun. It's like, and Sergio Aguero has made this cool, okay? This is why I've kept it. Sergio Aguero is probably my new Instagram style icon. And I'm waiting to see how long before he cuts his hair and removes it. Because,
well, you look more Portuguese with it, too.
That's it.
You just got to change your last name to Ferreira, not Felix. Doesn't work either.
Well, who was it called you a barista in the last podcast? I wasn't there. Who was that?
Dicchio.
It was Dicchio. Bang on. You are such a barista right now.
Yeah. He said that I look like I should be serving up a caramel macchiato.
Well, yeah, but he actually used that word.
Yeah. That's surprising. I know. He's a bit more cultured than we think.
He makes it up, though. He makes it, makes words up.
Yeah. Brilliantly well. It's also
brilliantly well. He makes words up that you actually understand.
It's shocking. Depending on his accent, if you can solve his accent. Stay on the continent here, because Barcelona look like a team that people understand again. As Xavi has taken charge, he won the Catalan Derby. And he's got a team that's going to be built around the philosophy first, for sure. They don't have the money to be buying stars as they have in the past, so might as well blood through the academy and focus on the academy for years to come. He had 2 17-year-olds in the squad, and it wasn't the most exciting game. It was 1-0, but it's the most Barcelona that they've looked in 3 years, I would say. it looked familiar.
Yeah, I didn't watch the game. What's familiar is seeing Xavi, though, at Camp Nou. I mean, it's great, and I hope he does a great job there because no one in this world dislikes Xavi, and he brings that. Ronald Koeman, I know he was a great Barcelona player, but something about him didn't cut Barcelona, you know?
Agreed, yeah.
Whereas Xavi does. He's maybe he's a tight pants. It could be that. It could be as simple as that.
Are you surprised with how these managers dress, by the way? That's going to be my point. Xavi, I wondered if...
More and more casual, right?
I wondered if Xavi was going to be, you know, suited and booted, if he was going to go a la Pep. He'd been a bit more casual in Qatar, but it was also 50 degrees at night. So,
yeah,
you know, polo shirt and chinos just kind of worked.
But the thing about football management is anything works because you have the tracksuit brigade and you got the suit brigade, right? The two extremes in life, as far as fashion is concerned, the tracky or the suited, and then anything in between, I guess, is acceptable.
I like Pep's look. He's got that, you know, it's not suit and it's not track suit. He's got some fashion sense.
Yeah.
Would you be a tracky coach or would you be a fashion coach, Craig?
Well, I would have to have somebody else dress me.
Much like you did for 20 years at Sportsnet. Yeah.
That's right.
I can see you wearing a trackie and wearing a hat. You're like Klopp. I can see you pulling the Klopp.
No.
You pull that off pretty well.
No.
No?
As you're wearing a hat and glasses right now, like your hat says Klopp.
And a tracksuit.
Your glasses say, I stayed up for 9 hours.
You got to get your teeth done so they're freaking really, really white. I think actually Klopp might have had them toned down. They don't look so...
Anyway, I guess after a certain number of coffees, they get toned down naturally, right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Exactly. Just filtered coffee through them for a while.
You're comparing them to Roberto Firmino's teeth and Felipe Coutinho's teeth. There's actually a great 7-minute story on the dentist that saved Liverpool's teeth. And how I think it was a Coutinho that went there first. I think Coutinho was the first one and his teeth were just incredible. And then they all followed suit. But that Firmino actually has, there's not a whiter shade that you can buy at the dentist.
Yeah, yeah.
He has absolutely the whitest.
They're interchangeable. Klopp uses the same ones.
Do you think, could it be tactical? I mean, for Firmino, his goal scoring went up the minute he got his teeth done. Could it be that you're kind of blinding the goalkeeper when you flash those teeth and that's why he did it?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's just when you run off after scoring, you're more confident to smile.
Smile.
As opposed to...
I don't want to show my picket teeth.
That's it. And Firmino was, you know, happy, smiley Brazilian. He smiled a lot at Hoffenheim with his braces and his big yellow teeth. And now he's got the best teeth in all of soccer.
All of Brazil.
Klopp's getting better. Like he's improving himself bit by bit, right? He gets his teeth done. He gets his eyes done. What's next? It's got to be a facelift, right?
Well, he's had the transplant.
The Klopp?
Oh, yeah. He's had a little tidy up there.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Really? He wears a hat, though. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I didn't think he... Are you looking at the modeling photos of him? By the time you listen to this, I'll have posted it. But there's a model for some American fashion brand who looks exactly like Jurgen Klopp.
Really? Well, for this particular topic, I think let's just assume that Craig's right. It works better. So, yes, now he's got his teeth done, his eyes done, he's got his hair done. You know, maybe he's got abs now. Maybe he's got, like, arse implants. I don't know. He's improving himself bit by bit. He's the new Kim Kardashian of football.
Could you imagine? Hey, he's got a tight track bottoms on. He's got these implant asses. Yeah. Kim Kardashian looking like, oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be just different class.
Isn't Liverpool the center of cosmetic enhancements in the UK?
Fuck, I doubt
it. I don't know. Are they the Venezuela of England?
I doubt it.
No, Liverpool leads the league in tanning salons per capita. There's the most tanning salons. It's like the vanity capital. It's the vanity capital of the British Isles.
Oh, I believe that.
Is it really? Didn't know that.
I could see the sunbathe,
tan beds.
I could see that because they don't believe in skin cancer or anything like that.
No.
Not up there.
I can't believe we've got towards what will be the end of the show, but I've not spoken about Steven Gerrard much. I think I referenced his debut quickly.
Oh, yes, you did. Many
people believe that he will be the next Liverpool boss, as do I. That won't be anytime soon because he's going to lead Villa to the Champions League.
I wonder if Xabi Alonso is the next Liverpool boss, actually. You know, he's doing a nice job right now, isn't he?
Ooh.
CVG, though. Hey, listen, great way to start. Dean Smith, too, by the way. Great way to start at Norwich as well, both with wins.
Uh-huh.
And just seeing Stevie G on the sidelines where he celebrated those goals. It's a great fit for both players and manager, I think. I like that. It looks kind of natural to see Stevie G at Villa Park, actually, I think.
It's a good job for him. It's a good job. It's a big step for him, for sure. A lot of pressure.
It's a really good step for him. And reading about kind of just his hesitancy in taking the Rangers job, or I shouldn't say hesitancy, but he got offered quite a few gigs rather early. I think he was still in LA and there was some team that had offered him a coaching job. And he said, I'm not ready. And he went to the academy at Liverpool, and he started younger than the 18s. And then they gave him the 18 job. And he was there for a few years, right, before taking the Rangers job.
Mm-hmm. Learning from Klopp.
Some of the conversations about what happened at Rangers when he showed up reminded me of the conversations we've had with John Herdman about kind of professionalizing that outfit for Canada, and how in ways, you know, he brought a Premier League professionalization to the Rangers setup and the Rangers camp. And he just seems like a player, as we know, he was an incredible player. As a manager, he's really put that same level of work in as a manager. And I don't think that, you know, we've seen that with some other guys. That's probably the biggest criticism of Zidane, I think, to put that same level into the other side of the coin. So I think it's a great situation for him. And I think that he'll bring some success. I don't know if he'll be kicking on for Europe just yet, but I think he'll bring some success.
When I mentioned earlier about the whole Carrick press conference today.
Mm-hmm.
This must be of great, grave concern to United fans. I just saw on Twitter, one of his quotes has popped up. So during this press conference, Michael Carrick says, me and Ollie have very similar beliefs tactically. Uh-oh. That's not good. Why would you say that?
I was reading last night, what are the worst things that Michael Carrick could say in this press conference? And they were centering it around, you know, do you want the full-time job? Are you ready for the full-time job? Ollie was the interim, and then they gave him the full-time job. Is that what you want? And they were kind of debating how his answer could really blow up in his face. I think he just did it there by saying we have the same tactical views. But also, Carrick is an interesting choice because he's been part of two failed regimes.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, high-profile name, and obviously someone who knows the club very well, kind of on brand, I guess, for this interim tag. And with Ryan Giggs not available, you know, that's a person I think that they would have looked to bring in that would have been on suit. Michael Carrick's kind of like 2.0, the next best choice, and he was already there. Yeah, but maybe. Two failed regimes.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe Giggs's reputation too behind, like, isn't great, you know, hurts him.
Yeah, I don't think Giggs is getting another shout. Not for a while, anyway.
Michael Carrick's very well respected.
Not to mention how without Giggs, they're playing actually a much more expansive style of football right now as well. So Giggs is not enjoying a good 2021, put it that way.
No, definitely not. Well, we have. As Footy Prime, we've enjoyed a pretty good 2021. Thanks to everyone who's been listening to us in record numbers, and as we put out two shows a week. And thanks to our guest James Sharman today for coming on and joining us on the Weekend Recap, buddy.
Well, thanks for having me, boys. I mean, it's kind of been a big deal for me. I've heard a lot about this podcast, and now to actually, you know, appear on it. Wow, that's a career high. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, usually Craig and I go through an hour and 10 minutes in every single game, and I think we skipped 7 games. I don't think we didn't even talk about his beloved West Ham. And
we don't want to talk about them. We don't want to talk about
them. I'm happy to ruin the lineup. I'm good at ruining rundowns. So as you'll find out in the next podcast on Wednesday or Thursday, whenever we record it.
When there is no rundown. I did wonder what it would be like hosting. Would you be like a Wonger and, you know, just throwing us down different roads? I don't think you mentioned Dix once. So.
Nope.
There's a win.
A lot more class than Wonger.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. There's no alcohol involved right now.
Yeah, that's a big part of it too. That is true. It's a morning podcast. My brain works a lot better actually in the morning. There's no doubt about it.
You said you think Xabi Alonso would be the next one because he's doing so well. Where's Xabi Alonso managing?
Well, I think I know that. Come on. Xabi Alonso, the greatest defensive midfielder to ever play at Anfield for many years, won many a trophy, if not the actual championship itself. He did very, very good. He is, as I keep searching on Wikipedia here.
I know what it is. And I Real actually Sociedad thought, yeah, I actually, you know, when you said that, I thought, does Sharms think he has the big job? That he's top of the table, Real Sociedad?
No, he's doing a good job though, apparently. Sociedad B. And actually the picture, weird enough, the picture on Wikipedia of Xabi looks just like Steven Gerrard. That's crazy. Look it up on Wikipedia, Xabi Alonso. It's nuts. It's Steven Gerrard.
I did tweet that Xavi looks like a friend of the show, Sid Sixero. That got a lot of reaction.
He does. He does. If he put on another 50 pounds, it would be Sid.
They have the same coat. They have the same, like, morning television coat. That's what I was surprised by with Xavi on the touchline. Okay. 4-minute goodbyes. This is great. We'll do it again midweek, boys?
Yeah, for sure.
To quote our guest and my good friend, James Sharman, cheers for listening.